Possible in part by Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, celebrating the holiday season with the Champaign-Urbana Ballet's performances of The Nutcracker and A Scottish Christmas, featuring fiddler Bonnie Rideout and friends. For more information, contact the Krannert Center ticket office at 217-333-6280 or visit krannertcenter.com. Support for today's broadcast is provided by World Harvest International and Gourmet Foods at 6th and University in Champaign. For over 14 years, providing Champaign-Urbana with an international selection of cheeses, olive oil, balsamic vinegar, spices, chocolates, cookies, and more. Catering services are also available. World Harvest encourages you to join them in supporting public radio.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Thanks for tuning in. When we hear the word attitude, we're likely to think of a person's disposition or state of mind. But it's also a term in the world of ballet. It describes a positioning of the leg. For a dancer to succeed, attitude involves commitment and talent. Attitude and ability. Our guest this afternoon is journalist Catherine Davis Fishman. She followed 8 young dancers through a year of study at one of the country's top dance schools, the Ailey School. The Ailey School is the official school of the Alvin Ailey American Dance Theater, one of the most prestigious dance companies in the world. Catherine Fishman was curious about what makes a talented dancer. Here are some of the questions she set out with. What is physical? What is intellectual? And what is emotional? And is there a particular style of acquiring knowledge in the field of dance? She's written a book about what she learned from the students of the Ailey School and their teachers. The title, Attitude, 8 Young Dancers Come of Age at the Ailey School. Listeners, I invite you to join the discussion. I look forward to your questions and comments. You can join us with a telephone call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Outside the local dialing area, use the toll-free number 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. Our guest, Catherine Davis Fishman, is also the author of Behind the One-Way Mirror, Psychotherapy and Children. Her new book, Attitude, is published by Tarcher Penguin. 333-9455 and 800-222-9455 to join the discussion this afternoon. Catherine Fishman, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Nice to be here, Celeste.
This time of life for these young people, it can be a time of great passion, passionate interests, and these young dancers are passionate about dance. But
very intense.
Yes, but as you note in the story, most dancers, even off stage, are more physically than verbally expressive. I'm curious here at the outset, maybe you could talk with us about how they do talk or otherwise communicate their passion for dance, this attitude that they have.
Well, you will see dedicated dancers dancing all the time. So it's sort of fun. You stand in the aisle in the corridor of the Ailey School, and you're talking to someone, and they're doing pliés, and they're doing, which is sort of moving down on bent knees or standing up on their toes and turning a bit while they talk with you. They're never still.
They're always in motion.
They're always in motion, yeah. Yeah.
And how do they talk with one another about dance, and do they critique one another?
Definitely they do. If you hear them sitting around in the student lounge, they will be gossiping, as everybody always does gossip, and it's like a kind of office gossip. It's sort of they talk about the way others dance. Most of the conversation revolves around dance, but they also feel free to criticize each other and to say, you're my friend and you ought to be working harder on this, you ought not to give up on that. It sort of is their whole interest.
Yeah, yeah. Well, tell us about the idea and the reality of something that is called ensemble spirit.
Yeah. One good incident that I noticed, which your competitors and your best friends are the same, which is a very tricky thing for teenagers. And there were two boys during that year, Shamel and Serge, who were very, very driven and dedicated, both of them. And at the end of the year, the school was going to give a production of part of Revelations, which is the main Ailey ballet. And Shamel had to take a leave, and he was not allowed to be in the show, but he was allowed to understudy. So he would show up looking wistful at every single rehearsal. And one day, Serge wasn't there, and Shamel got to move in and take Serge's part, and Shamel was really, really happy. The next time, Serge showed up, and I could sort of see Shamel's face fall, but then he was over in one corner of the room working with Serge, bringing him up to date on what he'd missed. And I don't know if you'd see that in law school. They're willing to both help each other, and they're aware that there's this competition, but they're going to have to manage it all their lives.
That's right, because if they go on to work in the world of dance and earn a life in the world of dance, it is a very competitive world.
Yeah, and they're going to be at the same auditions, and they're going to be, somebody's going to get the part and somebody is not going to. But there's also this feeling that they're a special community, that the only people who understand them are other dancers who understand the passion and the intensity of their feeling. So those dancers are their closest friends.
Mm-hmm. You talked about Shamel Pitts. Dance is a way of living for him. He's described by one of the teachers as a hungry dancer.
Yeah.
Tell us about him and his passion for dance.
Shamel really got into dancing, seriously, at a time when his mother became sick. And his mother had a serious illness. She was always in and out of the hospital, and Shamel had danced a little bit, sort of in a gym class. And then the year that his mother got really sick, he began to find refuge in dance. And he tried out, first of all, for LaGuardia High School, which is the conservatory high school that many of these kids go to. And then a year later came to Ailey School. And he did marvelously well because he is very talented and extremely personable, very good-natured and hardworking. And he got important parts. And he, at the beginning of the year, Shamel, the first couple of things that happened were that he got a big scholarship and he got a part in a production they were going to do. But the third thing that happened was that his mother died.
Mm-hmm.
He was 16 years old. And the way Shamel dealt with it was to be constantly busy, never to have time to stop and think about it. I think he told me that he was in denial, that he didn't really realize it. But meanwhile, he tried out for everything and worked very, very hard. People at the school wondered whether he was going to break down sooner or later. He has not done so to this day.
Hmm. Another one of the students that you got to know face some problems as well, Beatrice Capote.
Mm-hmm.
Her grandmother died, and she had two tough years. She suffered injury, she gained some weight, and her grandmother died.
That's right.
And she also persevered.
She persevered. She had started dancing early in life and got to the Ailey School when she was 10. She'd been there longer than anybody else, and she was a senior during this year, and she was quite close to her mother, and her mother would perk her up. And whenever she had a good network of people around her, she was a very good friend. She talked to people and helped them, and when she got depressed, they would cheer her up, and she would cheer them up. And she had the feeling that this was what she could do well, and she was going to do it. And no matter what went wrong, she kept on, and she acquired this kind of persistent quality that is bound to help her. She had what lasted were the weight problems. That was something a battle she constantly fought. But she kept on. She had some problems in getting into college, and she made a plan for what would happen if she didn't get into college. Things worked out for her, as it turned out, but she was not going to let anything get her down.
Yeah. Also here, I'd like to mention the fact that also this year that you were there was the 2001-2002 school year.
Yes.
And so here we have the year beginning with the attacks.
Yes.
Of September 11th. How did that affect the Ailey School at the outset of the year and as the months passed?
In the beginning, it affected them more or less as it affected everybody in New York. There's a huddling together. And then among the older students, certainly, there was a kind of questioning. Why am I doing these dance steps when the world is when this tragedy has happened and the world is in this condition? But after a while, life takes over. The younger kids, the teenagers, really were very self-absorbed, and I kept looking for things, for evidence that this was a different year. I didn't see it. I didn't think. I had also been hanging around the school a bit the year earlier, and I didn't see after the beginning, except for the fact that there were a couple of weeks of class that were lost and things were a little bit more disorganized and hurried around the school in the beginning. There was a bulletin board where people put up articles that pertained to this and that were of interest to them and that they wanted to share. And that was there for the whole year. Otherwise, it was like the rest of the city. They rallied.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they had one another, and they had this intense passion for dance, and they kept, it seems like they kept on point.
Yes, yes, literally and figuratively.
Right. I didn't intend that pun, but it just popped out. I want to talk about another dancer that I found very interesting, Travis McGee.
Oh, yes. Travis was... A little boy had a bunch of different talents, and he came from a family where they were interested in the arts. They had his father had been a musician, his mother had taken some dance lessons. They were very knowledgeable about the arts, and they sort of believed in nurturing what talent he had. And they didn't know whether he was going to be an actor or a singer or a dancer or what. And it took until he was maybe 10 or 11 that he settled on dance. And the problem that Travis had and that most boys have is that they get hassled around in middle school. And Travis, at this point, lived in a town in upstate New York, not a town where there was a lot of dance. And he got a lot of hassles. And he also was beginning to be so advanced that people said it was that he ought to get a kind of training that he could only get in New York. And his parents moved to New York, or turned the whole family upside down, really. His father stayed in the small town, and his mother came with him to New York. His brother went to college. And there was a lot of back and forth between the parents and the small town and everything. But really, this family moved with their son and did what he needed. As he went on in school, he had a bunch of interests. He's the kind of kid that sort of embraces the world. And he got interested in photography. He got interested in debating and law and civil liberties. So he would kind of say, well, I'll be a dancer and a photographer and a lawyer. Had no problem thinking that he could be all of these things. He was interested in musical comedy and spent a summer at Anne Reinking's musical comedy workshop. And the thing about Travis was that the other kids were totally single-minded. And Ailey was not used to dealing with someone who had this many interests. Meanwhile, also, Travis's parents were toughening him up because they thought that he'd gotten all these hassles and they wanted to train him to fight back and so forth. And by the time he got to Ailey, he had a good, strong self-image. So he came across as having perhaps a little more attitude than they liked at Ailey. And so in the beginning, he did quite well. In his last year, he got a few blows, and he had to deal with them.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't get into some advanced classes that he wanted to get into. And he also did not win Ailey's sponsorship in this big, important competition that students in the arts all over the country compete for, the Arts Recognition Talent Search.
Hmm.
So he had to do his own competition. And he felt blue about this, but he rallied and he pushed on and became much more mature as the year went on. And you see him at the end knowing how to ask for what he wants without being either overbearing or too meek. He got into almost every school that he applied to, and he's now at Boston Conservatory doing very, very well.
Yeah. The students at Ailey, not all of them are going to go on and become dancers. What kind of ambitions do they have? What do they see themselves doing after they enter this period of their lives, where they finish high school?
Actually, most of them say they do want to be dancers. Sometimes they get a little nervous and a little defensive, and they say, well, it's full of competition, and you don't make much money, and I really have to have something else. And the Ailey people always say that they should have more than one career, because dancers, of course, also retire at an early age. So they had the notion, most of them, that they should have some kind of backup. So they would tell you kind of vaguely, oh, I'm going to go into marketing, or well, maybe I could be a lawyer, or something like that. Most of the time, they really can't see too far ahead.
Mm-hmm.
And so you find now all of them, except one, are dancing now. There's one who is also at a school which is not a conservatory, which has both a dance program and regular academics. But most of them have gone to conservatory schools. They're all in college now. One girl decided she wanted to audition and do commercial dancing. And she is actually, at this moment, a Rockette in Denver.
Wow. You know, I want to go back to something that Travis McGee told you at some point along the line. He was interested, as you mentioned, in photography and law, and he thought somehow that could help make him a better dancer.
Yeah.
I thought that was really interesting because I think no matter what these young people do eventually, I think that the Ailey experience and their pursuit of dance is going to make them better people.
I think that they have there are a bunch of things that they pick up. There is the idea of focusing on a goal, so that if you want to get the thing you're after, there's some things you may have to do along the way that you might not want to do ordinarily, but in the interests of getting what you want, you have to do this. And this is something we all learn, and they learn earlier than perhaps than other teens. They learn to be serious and work hard. I think it is possible that they have a very expanded cosmopolitan view. They learn to be much more accepting of people who are different from them. And that's quite wonderful also.
Yeah. Our guest this afternoon here on the Afternoon Magazine is Catherine Davis Fishman. She's a journalist. Her latest book is Attitude, Eight Young Dancers Come of Age at the Ailey School. Listeners, you can join us this afternoon with questions, comments. Join the discussion with a telephone call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Early in the book, you say we should know that modern dance began as a rebellion against ballet.
Mm-hmm.
But the Ailey School considers ballet the core of strong technique, and it's been that way since the school's founding. And one of the teachers tells the students after an audition, we're a very traditional school. This is Miss Denise Jefferson.
Yes.
What should we know about the Ailey School in terms of its history and its values?
I think that it comes from European dance culture. In fact, I guess when I first met Denise Jefferson, I noticed, for example, that the teachers are all called Miss This and Mr. That. No Mrs. and no Susie and Johnny. I think that other schools are somewhat in their style a bit more progressive. I mean, academic schools even. The European dance culture is much more formal. There is a certain formality, and at the same time, the teachers are young and cool. They're in their 30s and early 40s, many. There are some older ones also. But they are able to sit down and talk with the kids. But there is a sort of formal respect that is expected. The school has sort of a dress code, which doesn't have to do with the clothes you wear when you arrive at school. You, of course, get into your leotards and your tights. The girls wear a different color leotard according to what year they're in, and so you have a feeling almost like some sort of medieval guild that you can look at a ladder of ascendance, and you can look at a girl and see where she is. You can look at adults at every age who have danced, and if you are a kid and you want to know what is it like to be a dancer when you're 40, there are a number of teachers that can tell you. There's a lot of communication between the young people and the older people in the school, and this is mentoring, really, so that if kids do have problems, they can come and talk. The teachers don't expect them to necessarily, but they will find someone and they will be there. The members of the company will work with the kids and give them extra training for the arts competition so that they get to know these older dancers and accomplished arrived dancers who are famous in their world and who are helping them. which certainly encourages them to continue in dance, which gives them a belief that this is the kind of life you can make, and that's very important.
Yeah. In this passage, Denise Jefferson says, "You conduct yourselves at the highest level." And then she continues, "Because you represent us and Miss Jameson," who, of course, is Judith Jameson.
Judith Jameson, yes.
Yeah. And I think that if you are somebody like Shamel Pitts, that must be a very positive message. I can come here and I'm expected to do my best.
Yeah, yeah. And that does keep them going. It does open worlds for them. I think they take themselves seriously, not in a pretentious way, but in terms of I'm working, I'm doing something difficult, and I'm succeeding at it.
That's interesting. You know, that was something that came through, I think, very nicely in this book, that this is not a pretentious pursuit at all, and it's not a pretentious school. And here, I think, this was the question I was going to ask you.
Mm-hmm.
Going back to Alvin Ailey and his philosophy of dance, dance is for everybody.
Yes.
And here it's coming through, you know, because the question I wanted to ask was, you know, how does the school exude that value dances for
it
everybody?
It doesn't do the kind of screening, for example, that a ballet academy will do, where kids are eliminated every year, and often for physical characteristics, which are rather arcane, the way that have to do with your feet and the way you turn and so forth. Ailey is a bit subtler about it. They let everyone in, and then after a certain point, they divide so that there are all the kids at level four, say. There are several different classes in level four, and 4A is going to come two or three times a week, whereas 4C is going to come once a week. Well, you start to get a message. If you're in the group that comes once a week, that maybe you're a bit less well endowed than the others, and you will find people at around the age of 10, you will find some kids dropping out. So you get to a point where the kids in high school, the kids from 15, 16, and 17, which is the ages that I looked at, are all extremely talented, extremely good. The rest of them have been subtly weeded out.
Mm. The students that we've talked about by name so far, including Shamel, Beatrice, and Travis, they are at an advanced level when when we meet them in attitude. They've been told they have talent.
Right.
What does that mean? What is talent? And what does it consist of? And how does a teacher or how do the teachers at Ailey know she's talented, he's talented?
You can start, I guess, I could look up from having hung around there at a group of five-year-olds and spot the kids who will be dancers when they're teenagers. I can't do it, obviously, as well as a teacher could. But there is a kind of focus and a kind of feel for the music that they have. And it's rather clear that kind of talent shows up early. And most of these kids have a history of when they were 3 years old. Whenever the television was on, they would dance to the music. When they went to family parties or something, they would dance. There are all kinds of stories. Travis at a resort when he was a little kid, running up on stage and dancing with a band. So that's the first thing that you see. What then happens is they're trained, and it becomes harder to say what is raw talent and what is working very, very hard. There were some kids there who had hard bodies, as some teachers would say, and they needed to work extra hard in order to dance to the level that was needed. And they put more time in it and more effort. And by the time you're finished there, you can almost hardly tell what is hard work and what is native endowment. Certainly, when I sat there, this is one of these are the abilities that I most conspicuously don't have. I was sent to dancing school in hopes that I might learn the difference between left and right, and sort of never quite did. But I could see, not just because I'm older and have a little arthritis, but I looked at what they could do and remember. And I knew that when I was their age, there's no way I could have done that.
Yeah. I was sent to ice dancing lessons for the same reason. Yeah, I can tell you left from right, but that's about all. I was not a talented skater at all.
Yeah.
Well, that gets me thinking about parents. This surprised me in attitude. Some parents are opposed to their children's dancing. Did that surprise you?
No, not at all, really. The parents that were opposed were more often parents of boys, because for a bunch of different reasons, partly because I suppose there is this association of dance with effeminacy in boys, and that's something that boys have always had to struggle with. And also because I suppose parents feel that dance is not a terribly well-paying profession, and that will more boys than girls, the parents will be concerned about how much money the kid's going to make. It's very competitive. And the other thing is that you can be injured in such a way as to end your career immediately. So that there are all of these risks, and parents want to protect their kids. Other parents, the ones here, most of the ones by the time the kids were at an advanced level, they very much wanted their kid to follow their dream, that they felt that they couldn't deny their child, even if it cost them some sacrifice. And it definitely did.
I'm thinking of what Travis's parents did for him and what Afra Hines'
mother. Afra Hines' mother was a single mom. Afra and her mother moved to New York from Boston before her senior year, in the middle of her junior year. And Afra's mom worked two jobs. She one day I decided to follow Afra around, and I went to school with her, and I went to then up to Ailey with her. And her mother picked her up in the car at Ailey, drove her home. Afra had a quick hero sandwich and went upstairs, and Afra ate very quickly and changed her clothes and went down, and she had an outside gig that she was rehearsing for. So her mother drove her downtown again from 93rd Street to 57th Street, and Afra went up to rehearse, and her mother sat downstairs in the car until 11 o'clock when the rehearsal was over. And she had to work the next day.
No.
And it would not have occurred to her not to do this. She felt that what Afra wanted, she should have. And she was a very progressive-minded mother. She had sent her daughter to Sudbury Valley, which is a very, very progressive school where the kids choose what they want to study and so forth. And generally she thought that the thing to do was to sit back, that the parent should sit back and let the child decide what she wants to do. And with Afra, this worked very, very well. Afra was a very focused girl. She was a self-starter. And this was absolutely the best thing for her. She is the girl who's the Rockette now.
Yeah. Also, you know, speaking of self-starters, the students, they have to have a lot of tenacity.
Yeah.
Tenacity, I would say, has to be one element of this kind of attitude that we've been talking about, the kind that of attitude that you need to succeed
right.
as a dancer. And Brian Brown jumps to mind now.
Yes, yes.
I mean, he's in New York City as a very young man here, a high school student, and he's making his way in the world.
Oh, yes, yes. He is right near you now dancing with Gus Giordano's Jazz Dance Chicago. He has a new name, which celebrated his becoming a professional, so he's Bryant Williams. But anyway, he lived in San Francisco, parents divorced, father on the East Coast, mother on the West Coast, and he was dancing. Going to studying at the San Francisco Ballet after some local schools, and he saw a TV show on NPR,
PBS.
PBS, yes. Mm. And it was a tribute to Alvin Ailey after his death, and he was totally smitten with Alvin Ailey and what he believed in, the spirituality of it and the beauty of it, and he said, that's where I want to go, and he immediately auditioned for summer school. He came to Ailey in the summer. He then came back the next summer, and he felt in a way that Ailey was talking to him. He had felt that he had a sort of personal connection with Ailey's spirit, not in any sick sort of way, but in a kind of melodramatic teenage way, I guess. And he, when he wanted something, he got it. He made arrangements when he decided to stay throughout the year and got his parents to agree to this. In a week, he found a school that he could get into and get financial aid, Professional Children's School, which is a private school for kids who perform. He found a place to live that his mother approved of. He set himself up. And then later on, he had a dancer in the company, Duana Smallwood, who he particularly admired. And he was going to compete in the Arts Recognition and Talent Search. And he went up to Duana Smallwood and said, will you please choreograph my entry? And she said, sure. And so there began this relationship where she was training him. Sometimes he would be... he would want to do things his way. He was a strong-willed boy. And she would leave him alone in the studio to work things out and then come back a few minutes, 15 minutes later or a half an hour later, and he would have been working and he would have figured it out. And it was a slightly contentious relationship, but a good one. And he came out best of anyone. That year, nobody from New York City won the contest. But he was an honorable mention, and that was a year when they had less money and they had fewer winners in dance. So it's entirely possible that in another year he could have been a winner. But at any rate, he did the best of everyone. And ultimately, he always had to make a living. He had a minimum of support. His parents really wanted him to go back to school. and they wanted him to go to college. He was very bright. And when I spoke to his father said, I understand what he's doing, and I think he's wonderful and all that, but it wouldn't hurt that kid one bit to go to college. So there was kind of that feeling that if he was going to do this and not go to college, he was going to have to support himself. He did get little bits of assistance from his parents. I think that they bought him a ticket to come to Chicago and audition, and they have been more supportive now. But he very efficiently got whatever he wanted.
Mm. How have the Ailey people responded to your book?
They like it. It's always difficult when it's like the first time you hear your voice on a tape recorder. Mm. You know, you pick up some things. It's a straightforward book. They said it certainly is an honest book. But they did like it. And I did a reading at Borders a month or so ago, and Denise Jefferson, the director, came with me to answer questions. So they are pleased with it. And the kids, I've gotten some lovely letters from some of the kids. And the kids that I've spoken to have all been pleased. Afra said to me, and this is kind of important, I think. She said, I will always be a dancer, even when I'm old and can barely stand, even if I can only dance in my mind.
Hmm.
So they were glad to be written about and to have somebody pay respect to what they were doing.
Yeah. Along the way, have you met alumni? And, you know, people maybe not as old as Afra is thinking about one day she will be, Lord willing. But what do alumni have to say about their experiences at Ailey?
Well, it depends on how old an alumnus is. I think that people who are right, they all, the graduates, the kids, when they get out, they do miss it. And they stay in touch, and you see them come back. You go to a studio production there, and there's a whole sort of community of people coming in and sort of hugging each other. If they got into some kind of dispute with some teacher or something, then that'll be on their mind. But in general, I think they feel good. I didn't really concentrate on alumni,
yeah,
per se, and they don't track their alumni, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So most of the ones that you know are ones that are dancing or teaching.
Yeah. Well, the school was founded in 1970, so I don't know how many alumni they would have, and even, you know, if they wouldn't be very old, really. They'd be younger than me. Last thing I wanted to ask you about, just to wind up here. It's evident that the people, the faculty are very proud of their school. And I'm wondering, now that they're moving into a new building, what's that like for them?
Dusty and frantic.
Well, that should settle, though. And
I read
about this in the New York Times recently, and I thought, how wonderful for them.
Yeah, well, I spoke to somebody just the other day who said, you know, call and come by and I'll give you a tour. And I said, I'll wait a couple of weeks, right?
Very good.
But one of the kids in the book, who is now at the Boston Conservatory, said that she had in mind to take one more class in the old place just for sentiment.
Yeah.
I don't know if she ever got back. But
Well, there we'll have to wrap it up. I want to thank you very much for talking with me this afternoon.
And thank you, Celeste. It's been fun.
Catherine Davis Fishman has been my guest in this portion of the Afternoon Magazine. She is the author of Attitude, Eight Young Dancers Come of Age at the Ailey School. The book is published by Tarcher Penguin. 9 minutes before 2 o'clock Central Time, and settlement prices are in from the Chicago Board of Trade. Here's Tom Rogers.
Thanks a lot, Celeste, and good afternoon. Here are the prices as we see them. December wheat had a high today of 319, a low of 314. Settlement at 318.5. That was up 7.75 cents on the day. The March wheat had a high of 330, the low 324. Settled at 329.75, up 7.75. May wheat, the high today 337.5, the low 332.5. Settled at 337. That was up 8.25 cents. July wheat had a high of 343.5, the low 339, the settlement at 342.75, up 6.25. And the September wheat, the high 349.5, the low 348, settled at 349, up 5.5 cents. In the corn, December had a high today of 208.5, the low 204.75, settlement at 205.75, up 2.75 cents. The March, the high 219, the low 216, settlement at 217.5, up 3. May corn at a high of 226, a low of 223.5. It settled at 224.75, up 3 on the day. The July corn had a high of 232, the low of 229.75. It settled at 231, up 2.5. September far side corn at a high of 238, the low 236.75, settlement at 237.25. That was up 2. And December of 05 corn had a high of 245, the low 243.75. It settled at 244.75, up 1.5. The oats didn't follow the rest of the market today. They were down. The high today for December oats, 150.5, the low 147. They settled at 147.5, down 2. March had a high of 157, the low 154, settled at the low 154. It was off 1.75 cents today. Over to the beans, where short covering helped break the market up or keep the market up, as well as continued concerns over Asian soybean rust. The January contract today at a high of 555, the low 544, settled at 553, up 12.5 cents. March at a high of 559, the low 548.5, settled at 558, up 13.5. May beans, the high 565.5, the low 555.5. Settlement at 564, that was up 12.5 cents. July beans, the high 573, the low 556, settled at 570.5, up 13.5. August, the high 574, the low 568, settlement at 573.5, up 10.5. And the September farside beans had a high of 575, a low of 571, settled at the high 575, that was up 11 cents. Looking at the products, December soybean meal had a high of 159.70, the low 156.40, settled at 157.80. That was up 140 on the day. January bean meal, the high 160.80, the low 157.80, settled at 159.50, up 220. Bean oil for December had a high of 21.72, the low 21.33. It settled at 21.61, up 36. And the January soy oil contract, the high 21.83, the low 21.47, settled at 21.73, and that was up 34 on the day. Looks like cattle were up and hogs were down on the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. With those numbers, here's Celeste.
Okay, thank you, Tom. November feeder cattle, the high today 108.40, the low 108.20, settling at 108.37.5, up 10. January 104.22.5, the high 103.10, the low, the settlement 103.70, that up 50. March feeders 99.15, the high 98.25, the low 98.70, the settlement, that was up 30. December live cattle, today's high 87.45, the low 86.05, the settlement 87.32.5, that up 122.5. February 89.10, the high 87.95, the low 88.90, the settlement, that up 97.5. December lean hogs finished up today 75.42.5, the high 74.17.5, the low, the settlement 74.82.5, that up 45. February 73.90, the high 72.55, the low 72.87.5, the settlement, that down 42.5. April 70.85, the high 69.40, the low 70.07.5, the settlement, that was down 47. and a half. Maline hogs, 69.90 the high, 68.30 the low, 68.75 the settlement, that down 42 and a half. And February bellies, today's high, 101.20 the low, 98.50, finishing at 99.65, that down $1. Let's take a look now at what's happening on Wall Street. So I will refresh my screen here so as to give us the latest numbers. The Dow is currently up 60 points at 10,548. The NASDAQ 18 higher at 2,097. And the S&P 500 is up 7 points at 1182.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM, working with the American farmer, creating products from his crops, creating markets for his crops. ADM, resourceful by nature.
It's time once again to Ask Dr. Science. So let's ask Dr. Science.
That's me.
Remember, he knows more than you do.
That's right.
Susan Kratz from Columbus, Ohio wants to know, Dear Dr. Science, I have a friend who is a computer programmer. He's somewhat shy and doesn't leave his home often unless it's to go to work. I'm an athletic, outdoorsy type of woman who longs for someone to go camping with. Do you think I could change my friends so that we could do these things together?
Sure you could. All you have to do is treat the camping experience like a computer game. Tell him the tent is the castle of an evil warlord and the sleeping bags are giant worms. That the camp stove is a microfusion fuel tank and the gas lantern indicates how many lives you have left. You could record a soundtrack of annoying computer noises and have that playing in the background on the boombox. Of course, the dear Abby in me feels compelled to warn you that in the long run, this relationship is doomed to failure. I suppose you already knew that.
Thank you, Dr. Science. Send your science questions to Ask Dr. Science. Remember, he's not a real doctor.
I have a master's degree
in science.
Produced by Duck's Breath. To order the Dr. Science Smug Pack with I Know More Than You Do mug, T-shirt and tape, $29.95, call 800-989-DUCK.
Today's broadcast is made possible in part by a grant from JBJ Gifts, Home Decor and Collectibles, 723 South Neal, two blocks south of Green Street in Champaign. JBJ's offers Christmas decorations including Christmas ornaments, angels, Santas, snowmen and nativities, gifts, collectibles, and home decor items. More information is available online at jbjgifts.com.
You're tuned to the Afternoon Magazine on WILL Urbana, the broadcasting service of the College of Communications at the University of Illinois. I'm Celeste Quinn, the producer for the Afternoon Magazine. Harriet Williamson, our technical director today, Jason Croft. Join us Sunday mornings at 10:30 for The Treatment, featuring lively conversations with Elvis Mitchell and the people who make TV and film worth watching. This week, Elvis talks with Academy Award-winning writer-director Bill Condon, writer of Chicago.